You're listening to Vermont Credit Unions On Air, a service of the Association of Vermont Credit Unions, and I'm John Cody. Usually, it's the voice of Association President Joe Bergeron you hear at the beginning of each of our podcasts. But in this podcast, we're interviewing Joe as we reflect on his 45 years of service to credit unions, both inside and outside Vermont's borders. Joining me in this interview are fellow association employees Michelle Fullerton and Christine Davidson. And now, here's our chat with Joe. Joe, first question. When did you start working for the Vermont Credit Union League?
Hey, thanks, John. Great question, and thanks for the opportunity to look back to the beginnings of my credit union career. It's been a long time for sure. So I started working at the Vermont Credit Union League, the precursor to the Association of Vermont Credit Unions, on September 11th, 1978. And I had graduated from the University of Vermont in the spring of that year with a degree in music and business, so not really related to credit unions. But at that time, my father was, and had been for quite a few years, a manager, they called it, or treasurer, part-time basis, evenings and weekends, running a small parish credit union in the Burlington area. And he, at the same time, was on the board of the Vermont Credit Union League. And so he knew that they were expanding their staff from a whopping two people to three people. And that third person was going to be what they called at the time kind of a field representative, sort of the person that was responsible for going out and, you know, checking in on credit unions and maintaining contact with them by phone and in person and whatnot, because, hey, no internet to speak of at the time and that kind of stuff. And so he informed me about it, thought that I might be interested in the position when I graduated from the University of Vermont. And so he ended up resigning from the board of the Vermont Credit Union League so that there wouldn't be any conflict of interest there, and recommended that I apply, and I did, and I got the job, and we went from there.
So it's been a while, but my next question is, do you remember all those years back what your first project or task was?
I remember a lot about those first days, and you didn't ask this, but one thing that jumps into my mind, particularly since we're recording this not too far off from an upcoming Halloween holiday, is that on my first day on the job, I remember vividly that I had to go up the stairs to the office that was designated for me that had orange walls, black woodwork, and gold carpeting, and I was sitting at a green, like government-issue metal desk with a brown, creaky, old metal office chair. So all of that is emblazoned vividly in my mind for the rest of my life. First projects were Charlie Howe, my predecessor, had me reading lots of stuff about, you know, credit unions and the history of credit unions, and, you know, was giving me stacks of mail that he got that he had been through to try to orient me to what was going on at, you know, CUNA and so on and so forth at the time. There wasn't a whole lot of rhyme or reason, as I recall, to the stuff that I was reading, but just had to read a lot of stuff. And then eventually had me, you know, reaching out to credit unions to find out what life was like in Vermont credit unions and what was going on there, and eventually, you know, starting to drive around once in a while. We had chapters at the time, which was groupings of credit unions in a particular geographical area, and mostly volunteers from credit unions, board members and committee members, and some select staff would meet over dinner and hear about general kinds of things of interest to people in those credit unions. And so I'd attend those, representing the association or Vermont Credit League at the time. So that was a lot of what I did. My first, I guess I'll call it, dedicated kind of task was writing our once-a-month newsletter, which was a interesting kind of project. You know, it started out with him telling me what kinds of things that he wanted to see in it and whatnot. And it wasn't like today's newsletter. It was, and you didn't ask this, but I'm getting into it, so I hope I'm not jumping the gun. But, you know, in 1978, 79, 1980, we didn't have any computers in that office. Everything was done on typewriters and handwritten, right? So I'm writing out by hand things to put into this newsletter giving it to my coworker Kathy Andrus, who got to type it up on mimeograph sheets. And if she made one mistake typing a word, you know, on the very last word of this lengthy page, she'd have to start all over again and do it over again, and then take that mimeograph sheet, put it on the mimeograph machine, and it would do its ka-chunk, ka-chunk thing, spinning around, spitting out ink onto paper that, you know, smelled, and then, you know, having to assemble all of those and staple them and get them in the mail, sort, zip code sort, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. A lot of manual labor at the time, and getting high on the fumes of ink at the time.
Michelle, you have our next question. Go ahead.
Thanks, John. Joe, can you tell us an insight of what the organization was like in 1978 and through those first years?
Well, I just gave you an insight as to the level of technology that we had at the time, which was non-existent. We did have phones. And we had mimeograph machines, and the addressing of everything that went out in the mail was either typed individually on a typewriter, like, you know, a lot of people still do today, or we had, and I don't know what the name of the machine was called, but this, everybody that we mailed to, if it was like 1,000 people, you had 1,000 metal cards that you put through this machine that embossed, kind of like you'd emboss on a plastic card today, you know, their name and address and all that kind of stuff. But it was on metal cards, and then you would have to load those 1,000 metal cards into this machine and then load envelopes, and it would, you know, run the envelope past each metal card. And again, the thing was the size of a tank and made lots of noise, and so it was pretty dated. The association itself as an organization, you know, times were a lot different than they are now. There were a lot fewer issues in credit union land, although it didn't seem that way at the time, but compared to today, there were. And so the organization did the occasional education session, did an annual meeting like we do these days, but different format, of course. You know, attended, like I said before, chapter meetings, lobbied in the State House, but not nearly the way that we do today or as much as we do today. So it's mostly kind of a communications kind of organization. It was association only type entity. There wasn't fee based services or things like that. So it was, by today's standards, you know, pretty simple, pretty straightforward, but not unlike any other association in the state at the time.
Christine, you've got our next question.
Well, thank you, John. I want to make a comment that, you know, it has progressed over time. I remember working at a credit union when I would get your newsletter given to me by the mail, and whereas now, John...
And it probably still smelled of those ink fumes by the time you got it, too.
Yeah, and it was, you know, rather interesting how we have progressed, and now everybody gets the newsletter digitally. So, Joe, I have heard that the association was once in Montpelier. Can you tell me where other office locations were during your 45 years that you've been here?
I don't know all of them, but before my time, there were six other people who were president, or actually at the time when it started, it was called managing director. But either way, the chief executive, if you want to call it, of the Vermont Credit Union League. And it, for the first, oh, how many years was it? I want to say first about 20 years or so, it was a part-time position. And I think because of that, the organization moved around and was housed in whatever location that part-time president was from. So I know one name that kind of stands out leading the organization, because he did it for 20 years, but not all at once. It was in two segments, is a gentleman named Bob Rosegrant, and his wife, and I'm not sure if he was involved or not, but they had close ties to the Putney Credit Union in Putney, Vermont, north of Brattleboro at the time, a community-based credit union, one of the few, I think, community-based credit unions at the time, I think. And so it was the Vermont Credit Union League for his first stint, when he was a volunteer, so to speak, or part-time for about 5 years. It was run out of his house. And then he came back later. There was somebody else that assumed the reins. He came back later, ran it for another 10 years or so, and also from the Putney area. Roy Bergengren, you know, ran the Vermont Credit Union League for 6 years. He wasn't the first president of the organization. There was a guy named William Madden who ran it for about 5 months, and that was during the time when it was being formed and so on and so forth. But then Roy Bergengren took over. This was at a time when Roy Bergengren had just retired, so to speak, from running the early days of CUNA. And so he helped form the Credit Union National Association, CUNA Mutual at the time. There was a CUNA Supply organization that printed forms and things like that for credit unions. So he was involved with all of that and involved with running around the countryside to every state to try to get state legislatures to pass the laws to enable the formation of credit unions in the country, as well as at the federal level too. And when he retired from all of that work, there still wasn't a credit union law in Vermont, although there were credit unions, but they were all federally chartered. So when he retired, he came to Vermont, lived in the Montpelier area, worked in the State House lobbying for a state credit union law, which he achieved, and became the second, technically, president, managing director of the Vermont Credit Union League. And the last one before me was a guy named Charlie Howe, who was probably the longest serving in terms of one stint. The Bob Rose grant that I mentioned, you know, his was divided between a handful of years part-time and then a handful of years later full-time. But Charlie Howe, my predecessor, ran the organization for about 13 years. He had come to the Vermont Credit Union League from both the Vermont State Employees Association that he was active in and the Vermont State Employees Credit Union that he was on the board of at one time. And I'm not quite sure how he ended up on the board of the Vermont Credit Union League, but became its managing director at some point. And so he's the one that ended up technically employing me. And then I ended up working for him for about, 4 years before he unfortunately died in his sleep attending a credit union meeting out west. And so the board named me after a search, but named me president at the ripe old age of 25, which is unheard of today, but at the time, for whatever reason, they made that decision, right or wrong. And so I've been here ever since.
And how did you get the Association of Vermont Credit Unions to land in Colchester from being all the way down to Montpelier?
So our office, at the time that I started in 1978, like I said, the building with the orange walls and green desk and all that kind of stuff, when I started, we were housed on River Street in Montpelier in a converted, what used to be a meat market, I guess, as I understand. It was a rickety old building and, you know, in tough shape and whatnot. It still stands there today. I think it's housing. And somewhere about, so that was 1970, about 1982, and this ties into some projects we were looking for and whatnot, we purchased the building at 1000 Shelburne Road in South Burlington that we renovated and were housed in for the next 30 years.
Wow. And then you moved to Colchester.
Right. At the end of that 30-year run, we sold that building. It was New England Federal Credit Union that ended up buying it, and we ended up renting space in this office park that we sit in today in Colchester.
Okay. Michelle has our next question.
For those that might not know, the Association League at the time was organized in 1947, for those that might not have known that date. So I want to ask, what do you consider the three biggest inventions or projects that the organization has created throughout your tenure?
So, good question. Well, they're all good questions, but that one covers a lot of territory over, you know, 4+ decades. The association, or Vermont Credit Union League, purchasing the building in 1982 in South Burlington was probably, other than regular duties, the first major project that I had to take on as a 20-something-year-old with a lot of board guidance and assistance and whatnot, so negotiating the purchase and at the time financing of that building and the renovation of it was a big project. But it wasn't just that alone, because one of the reasons that we purchased that building is that we formed the first, and again, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun if you're getting into this later, but we formed with that building. It was the second or the third shared branch location in the country among about 14 credit unions in the state of Vermont. And so we put on the face of the building Vermont Credit Union Center, and those 14 or 15 credit unions were promoting to their members that they had an additional branch location on Shelburne Road, which was a very heavily trafficked area and whatnot. If you were in the area, chances are you crossed paths with that street at some point. And so the only other two locations, I think, in the country at the time for shared branching were, well, the one I'm familiar with, I think there was one outside of Detroit and there was one outside of Boston, and they were both in those locations where, you know, you hear the helicopter traffic report every day saying traffic is backed up for, you know, however many miles and whatnot at standstill, and that's where those locations were. So ours was more conducive, of course, more rural than those areas too. But we had a completely manual operation of, you know, enabling members of credit unions to conduct their activity to a certain extent at that location. So that was number one for me. That and the building combined were both a big milestone for me personally in my mind. Probably another one was, and kind of keying off of that, was that progressing into our ATM and debit card program for many of the same credit unions, but small to middling-sized credit unions. And that was a big technology effort on our part, and a lot of programming and a lot of upgrading over the years and so on and so forth, and that served us well for many, many years. And then the third thing that sticks out in my mind isn't one thing, except to the extent that it fits under the umbrella of advocacy, and that's numerous things. So over the years in advocacy, you know, we did, well, one rewrite of our Vermont credit union statutes in 2005 while I was here. That had been done once before in 1968, I think, a rewrite of those same credit union statutes. And then at a federal level, there were, during my tenure here, one, two, three, or four different big, rallies in D.C. on the Mall on different credit union issues, and a lot of petition gathering by us and every credit union league in the country and whatnot on different issues, the biggest one of which a lot of people are familiar with was trying to get Congress to enact House Resolution 1151, which changed the Federal Credit Union Act, which was basically known as the Campaign for Consumer Choice. And it was on the heels of a lawsuit by the bankers' associations of the country against the federal regulator, the National Credit Administration, who they were arguing had overstepped their bounds in the fields of membership that credit unions were allowed to have by that federal regulator. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the bankers on a technicality, and about half the members of credit unions, maybe a little bit less than that, were, at least technically on paper, were at risk of having to be ejected from the nation's credit unions, the federally chartered ones at the time, because their admission through the fields of membership that were granted was determined to be illegal by the Supreme Court, or illegal. And so Congress acted, after a lot of lobbying by our trade associations, to reverse that and modify the wording of the Federal Credit Union Act. And it was only a couple tiny little words, but they modified that wording to make, you know, the membership of all of those people legal after all. But that was a big, like a multi 3-year project and whatnot, with a lot, thousands and thousands of petitions.
Yeah, I remember we had mail after mail and credit unions dropping off petitions that members had signed.
Yes.
And just getting them off to where they need to go at the time, and just feeling, being a new employee, I would say maybe 5 years or so, just feeling the camaraderie between actually. There's members behind what we're doing.
Right.
For sure.
And and like Christine mentioned, you know, everything is digital now. So if we were doing this kind of thing now, it'd be a lot different. But at the time, it was all paper. And so I remember vividly carrying stacks and stacks and stacks of paper petitions that credit unions had collected in their lobbies over however many weeks and months it was. And we had two buses of credit union people, a lot of volunteers, to your board members, but some credit employees too, And you and I and a bunch of other people were on buses going to, well, I don't remember if you went or not, but those buses.
Held down the fort.
Yeah, held down the fort. Those buses, we had one starting in the northern part of the state, one starting further south, maybe it was Rutland. And so we brought, I don't know how many people two busloads hold, but anyway, to D.C., and we're on the mall holding banners and flags and all that kind of stuff and visiting with our members of Congress. So that was momentous. And there were two other such similar kinds of events on other issues. The first one was on share drafts, I think it was, when before your time here, Michelle, there was a campaign, and I've got one that about 1980 or so, so pretty early in my tenure, where we had to lobby for some legislation to reapprove or formalize the permission for federally chartered credit unions to have checking accounts or share drafts, as we called them at the time. And so a similar kind of campaign. And then later in 1996, I think, there was a campaign for consumer choice that was another field of membership related thing, like the one that you and I were chatting about in 1991. So there was a lot of activity going on in the 80s and 90s on all of that advocacy kind of arena. And I'm fortunate to have, you know, witnessed and been part of all of that.
Right, thank you. I'll throw it back to you, Christine.
Well, thank you, Michelle. That's a lot of work that the association has done over the past few years, Joe. But why did the League seek to modernize the Vermont credit union statutes in 2005?
Well, you know, and I think anybody in any credit union league or CUNA would tell you the same thing, that having a dual chartering system, and you don't hear it referenced too much anymore, but it doesn't change the fact that that's what we have. A dual chartering system in credit union land so that credit unions can have a choice of, do I want to be state chartered or do I want to be federally chartered? And yes, today they're all federally insured. That wasn't always the case. And that was another momentous occasion that happened. I'm going awry. But having credit unions of the nation have a choice as to whether they want to be chartered under state law or federal law is important. And in order to do that, you need to keep both kind of on par with each other. And you can see over the years where one has become more favorable than another at any point in time and whatnot by looking at, you know, when credit unions were chartered and were they chartered under federal law or were they chartered under state law.
Many different name changes.
And lots of name changes, too. And so this isn't accounting for mergers, but, you know, over the years you can see even in Little Vermont, and we had a height of 77 credit unions just before I started, and most of those were state chartered in Vermont. Some of them were federally chartered, and like I said, when credit unions first came on the scene in Vermont, there was no state credit union law, so everybody that was formed prior to Roy Bergengren coming to Vermont had to be federally chartered, and there were like, I don't know, 16, 17 credit unions at the time or something, but they were all federally chartered. Later on, in later years, you'd see some credit unions switch from one charter to another when they wanted to modify their field of membership and something that they wanted to do was permissible under one law, state or federal, but not under the other, or maybe some power they wanted to do. And so from time to time, you know, it's good to go back and modify your state credit union law to keep it somewhat up to date or on par with whatever the federal law is. Usually we do that by going in and, you know, introducing or having introduced legislation on a particular issue, whether it's an authority to do some activity or, you know, whatever it may be. But once in a while, you know, depending on how old your state law is and when the last time it was touched, it's better just to go in for a rewrite. And so that's what we did, that 2005 passage of a whole complete rewrite of all Vermont credit union statutes was a three-year process. And you don't really want to, from an advocacy perspective, you don't want to do that if you don't have to, because, one, it's a big uphill climb. There's going to be a lot of opposition no matter what you do. And then, two, you're opening up, you know, all credit union powers and everything about credit unions in your state to be picked apart and, you know, questioned. And, you know, usually you're better off focusing on your advocacy efforts on a particular issue instead of just everything about credit unions. So anyway, we had a lot of committees and a lot of work with the state regulator and whatnot over those 3 years leading up to passage of our recodification in 2005. But since then, it's all been individual actions. Or the state regulator just granting an authority because it has the power to do something for credit unions, to enable them to do something in parity with federal credit unions. So in our last rewrite, for example, we put in there a parity provision saying anything that a federal credit union can do, a state charter credit union can do with the approval of the state regulator. And so, you know, we haven't had the need for a rewrite since then because we can do it on an individual basis mostly.
That was good. Thank you. John, you have a question?
I do, Christine. I'm commenting the fact that 2005 was a very important year for the organization, not only because of the credit union statute project, which I was in my third year working for
right,
you.
Right.
And that was the year that we also put a bylaw amendment together for our annual meeting to change the name of the organization after starting in 1947, it had one name, Vermont Credit Union League.
Right.
And so the bylaw amendment was to change the name of the organization to Association of Vermont Credit Unions. What was the purpose of that bylaw amendment vote?
So I'll answer that. But first, while I'm thinking of it, I got to mention that actually there was a third name. In the very, very beginnings of this organization, it was called something like the Vermont Cooperative Council for a brief period of time.
I didn't know that.
And that's because it was really an offshoot of agricultural kind of co-ops when it very first started. So when they formed it in 1947, for a few years before that, they had this Vermont Cooperative Council, and it was comprised of representatives from each one of those 15 or 17 federal credit unions that I mentioned, and I think they had some ag roots and so on and so forth. But when they formed a trade association, so to speak, they called it Vermont Credit Union League from that point going forward. Why the name changed to Association of Vermont Credit Unions, and you've heard this story a million times, John, but I'm glad to share it with everyone else because it's entertaining, if nothing else, because whenever I was lobbying in the State House, you know, every other organization like us had the name Association in it. And it was, you know, Bankers Association or, Realtors Association and Builders Association and so on and so forth. And it just went on and on and on. And we were the only ones that had the name League in our name, except for the League of Cities and Towns. But everybody knew what that was. Lawmakers knew that, and they recognized that organization because there was a lot of municipal lobbying going on and whatnot, and there still is. But for us, you know, I'd go into the State House, and I jokingly say, you know, lawmakers would say, Vermont Credit Union, like, what is that? Is it like a bowling league or something like that? And so, you know, I sat with the board in a planning session 1 year and suggested, you know, maybe we ought to think about changing our name to Association. And at the time, there were a lot of other our counterparts in other states, they were starting to change their names, some of them. And so all the bigger guys, the cool guys out there were, you know, changing their name from Association to something network. I mean, from League to something network or, you know, so on and so forth. But I thought for advocacy purposes, it would be most beneficial for us to be called an association because that tells lawmakers, you know, what you are and why you're there. But in order to not be like every other association in the State House, I suggested, well, let's put the word association at the beginning instead at the end. So, yes, we changed our name to Association of Vermont Credit Unions. I don't know that it was a big deal to anyone because we're still the same organization. But you know, because I've shared this with you before, that the very next legislative session when I'm sitting in committee and I say, hi, I'm Joe Bergeron from the Association of Vermont Credit Unions, you know, the same lawmakers, a couple of them, would say something like, well, didn't you used to work for the Vermont Credit Union League? And so that's
still do.
Yes.
So, and I think there's still a lot of leagues still out there for
there
credit
are.
Union associations.
There are. Some didn't have country. Those concerns and go through those gymnastics.
Right. But. So you'll still see that. And I think credit unions today, you know, we call and they're like, oh, the league's on the phone.
I still do
it's,
that.
We're always, yep. We'll always be league to them, yeah.
It is to me, even.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Joe. We turn to Michelle for our final question.
Joe, again, thanks so much for joining us today. And I just want to ask, what are some of the most important milestones you see in the credit union movement during your years here at the association?
Well, thanks for that, Michelle. And there's a lot of them. And like I said, you know, the highlights for, I'm fortunate to have had a long tenure. I'm not going anywhere just yet anyway, but I'm fortunate to have been serving Vermont credit unions for, you know, 4.5 decades now. So to have been part of a lot of these different milestones that you're thinking of and asking about. And so from a, not specific to the association, but, you know, from a milestone in credit union development, you know, right when I first started, the first credit unions in the country and the first credit unions in Vermont starting to offer checking accounts, the first credit union starting to do or have ATM machines, and the first one in Vermont was, well, now New England Federal Credit Union. New England, and I'll never get the name right because, like so many, it was so long a time. New England IBM employees.
Whatever. Federal Credit Union.
It went on forever, yeah.
You had it.
And every government employee credit union had a long, long name like that, too. So I suppose I should say that shortening names to more interesting things is a milestone in credit union development. Actually, it's not one incident, but seeing credit unions, you know, when I started, every credit union was isolated. They had very narrow fields of membership. They were organized amongst, you know, a lot of factories, a lot of school districts. We had a lot of church parish credit unions, and none of those credit unions really touched each other. And I think the regulators, either federal or state, kept it that way intentionally so that credit unions didn't overlap. And the only overlap between credit unions was, you know, that maybe you were married and your spouse, you know, worked someplace else that also had a credit union. And so you had some cross-pollination between credit unions that way. But it's no wonder with the little cubicles that credit unions were in for who could join that credit unions just were not known, you know, widely, except if there was one at the place that you worked. And today, you know, we're, and this didn't happen like a light switch, but over time, there's so few of those credit unions. Now everybody has a broad or semi-broad community-based field of membership or geographical area kind of field of membership. And I see that as a big milestone in credit union development because now when I go in the State House, you know, everybody knows what a credit union is and they often think of credit unions first. Decades ago when I started, you know, you had to explain what's a credit union and, you know, what are they doing and how many are in the state and all that kind of stuff. Today we don't need to do that. Credit unions are a big deal and most lawmakers are members of a credit union. Some aren't, but in Vermont our 180 lawmakers, the vast majority of them are members of a credit union or multiple credit unions. So we don't have to explain ourselves to them anymore. The passage of those advocacy issues, like I mentioned about field of membership and whatnot, are all huge milestones in credit union land. Our, you know, shared branching effort and foray into, you know, ATM and debit card issuing and whatnot are all big deals. And we've had a lot of activity in the past with other types of cooperatives in Vermont. We held a cooperative summit in recent years, well, not so recent, but going back to 2016, where we had the first gubernatorial debate among candidates for the governor's office between ourselves and other cooperatives in the state of Vermont, and we've had a couple since then. But there's just a lot of those kinds of things that, you know, have taken place that are, you know, etched in my memory as milestones for Vermont credit unions or the nation's credit unions. And I'm just really fortunate to have been able to witness all of these things and be part of history in the making for credit unions.
Yeah, and I think the association certainly has that footprint in the State House because, you know,
for sure.
we're there probably every day, have
yes.
some type yeah. of representative. It's not credit unions or lobbyists or us ourselves, you yourself being
right.
there.
Right.
It's made a huge, huge difference for sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, that actually concludes our reminiscing on 45 years of service to Vermont Credit Unions by Joe Bergeron. I really gratefully thank my two co-hosts, Christine and Michelle, for helping us create all these questions. And of course, I have to thank my boss because I still work for him. And thank him for sharing an extraordinary 45-year career with us and with our listeners.
And I want to thank you, John, and Michelle, and Christine. And I do want to squeeze in one last thing, and that's that we have a video on YouTube that is not about me, but about the history of the Vermont Credit Union League and the Association of Vermont Credit Unions and those early credit unions before we existed and whatnot. And all of these kinds of milestones and whatnot. And I know, I forget how many, it's a few years old now, but it covers most all of what we've touched on here and more. And so if anyone's interested in having an appreciation for the development of Credit Unions of Vermont and some of the milestones nationwide, they should check out that that video on our Vermont Credit Unions YouTube channel.
Well, to all our listeners, thank you for joining us for this Vermont Credit Unions On Air podcast. We hope you found it interesting. All of our previously recorded podcasts are available by searching for Vermont Credit Unions On Air in the iTunes Store, SoundCloud.com, or in your favorite podcast player. If you have ideas for a podcast on anything you'd like to hear about, send an email to podcast@vermontcreditunions.coop. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.